Welcome to Let's Talk Land, weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling and ownership, especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the expert, free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm accredited land consultant, broker owner of United Country Real Estate Sutton Properties. Our new company name, along with my co-host, Teresa Martin. Hey, Teresa.
Hi, Lou. How are you?
You're one of our new agents, and you're doing great. So welcome to our co-host here. Buying and selling homes, land and farms in Western Piedmont, North Carolina, Southern Virginia, just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our new office, by the way, we moved a couple weeks ago, is now at 102 East Main Street, downtown Pilot Mountain, next to BB&T Bank. Please make a note of our changes, and our website changed from mylandpro.com to allsuttonproperties.com, but you can still get it either way. Program note, Dr. Barbie's Ask the Doctor show will now follow this show and will air at 10 a.m. after this show, so make sure you tune in and make note of that. Our guest today is Garrett Zoller, principal broker, owner of wildlife, land and wildlife in Medford, Oregon. Welcome, Garrett.
Hey, good morning. Welcome. Thank you for having me on, Teresa and Lou.
It's a pleasure to have you on. You're one of our fellow accredited land consultants. You're part of Realtors Land Institute, and you are located in Oregon, but you also cover Washington, and Idaho, and then I saw you also cover Alaska as well.
Yes, sir.
You're the managing principal broker of record, and you're the founder of landandwildlife.com. You got a really, really nice website. I don't know who did it for you, but it's very easy to operate and very clear and a lot of information on it.
Thank you.
And then what was hold on a second. Since earning your bachelor's degree in science and business and a minor in criminology, that helps out in real estate, doesn't it?
You know, in business it does. I think, I'm not sure if anything helps in real estate sometimes. But besides just a well-rounded school of hard knocks.
Absolutely.
It has helped as far as running the business goes, it's helped tremendously.
Well, actually, I just did a show 2 weeks ago with one of my he does everything. He's a forester, but he's also a surveyor and a realtor. But we did forensic surveying. So it's kind of uses some of that criminology, investigative technology, using his forestry, doing borings and trees. And it was quite an interesting show. If you haven't heard it, it's on the website, letstalkland.net.
I haven't. I've heard rumor of it. And that's something that absolutely intrigued me.
You'll enjoy that show.
I think it'd be great. One of our brokers here does a lot of forestry stuff. I have a lot of timber background, so definitely I'll be Googling that and listening to the show.
Now, how many is in your company?
34 brokers.
Oh, 34. Okay.
Yes, sir.
And I saw someplace, and I believe it was dated on your website that, or somewhere I was doing some research, you were looking at doing around $100 million in sales. Is that right?
Yep, for the last couple of years, we've been north of $100 million in sales, primarily specializing in farm and ranch and recreational. If it's rural, then that's really where our focus is.
Right.
So,
and the town you live in, how big is it? And tell me a little bit about it. Medford, right?
We're in, we're about a half hour north of the California border.
Okay.
So we still have that what they call the banana belt climate of California. We only have about 17 inches of rain, 19 inches of rain a year, I think there's 150, 1,000 people. It's a valley, and like everything else, there's the associated towns with it. So I think if you include from Ashland all the way to Grants Pass, it could be approaching 250,000. But there's rural properties in between, we have Crater Lake National Park and BLM and everything within half hour, 45 minute drive. So it's a great recreational paradise, really.
Yeah.
Oregon is and where I live is pretty nice.
Haven't been there. I've been from San Diego to Sausalito. Never got north of that, but they say it's just drop dead gorgeous up that way.
It is. It is. You're missing out. I mean, it's the Cascade Mountain Range is from what I can gather, it's pretty similar to, I've been in your neck of the woods for RLI a couple of years ago when we were in North Carolina. And from what I can gather, there's a mountain range just a couple hours inland from the coast, and that's similar to what our climate is like as well on the other side of the Cascades. It gets more high desert, you know, style. But, yeah, it's a very diverse the Pacific Northwest is extremely diverse. It's a fantastic area for, you know, all weather, just four seasons and different climate. It's pretty hard to beat.
Sounds like home.
I know a friend of mine was out there on vacation, and she said that she was riding down the road, and she said it looked like the mountains met the sky. She said they were so high that she said it was really pretty. I'm not exactly sure where she was, but I know she was coming into California.
Yep, that would probably be right around the Cascade Range. We have a lot of we have mountains that'll hit up to, you know, exceeding 9,000 foot in elevation. Volcanoes are obviously in our area, they say most are inactive. I mean, I'm sure that you guys remember Mount St. Helens is the last one that's blown up here in this area, you know, right on the Oregon-Washington border. You know, so that's it's pretty interesting.
It's
pretty wild country.
So who owns a – does somebody actually own a volcano then?
No, it's BLM. That's all public ground. They've got that locked down pretty good. So – you know, we have, I've sold some properties, kind of just outside the Crater Lake National Park, and Crater Lake was a volcano at one time, and, that had collapsed, and that's a national monument. I'm sure if you saw a picture of it, you'd recognize it. That's about, 45 minutes to an hour, just, northeast of me where I'm located.
So it seems like you've had a very successful career. How long have you been doing real estate?
I've been involved in real estate since my early 20s, and quite honestly, that was the only thing I ever really made money at. I've been an entrepreneur, you know, since I graduated from college, and I've actually been successful with small businesses since college, and I've been able to build them up and fortunately sell them off to a couple national chains and by being organized. And at the end of the day, people fail, systems don't. So if you create, you know, great systems, then you can rely on those systems. And my last business that sold, I sat back and, you know, thought about really having to manage inventory and employees, and it wasn't exciting me that much. And like I say, I've dabbled in real estate prior to having my license. So I got my license in 2004 and went to work for a traditional real estate company for a couple of years. And I knew that I wasn't really cut out to be just a traditional residential real estate broker. So I sought out the Cabela's Trophy Properties. It's no longer exists. They transitioned out of it. But it got me specialized in the recreational and farm and ranch type, I guess you want to say, specialty of real estate. And we started this company in 2008.
So there's
a long answer.
Would you say that that's the secret to your success, getting into land?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I think that the secret to my success and to our success as a company really comes down to a passion for the outdoors and loving what we do. You know, it's really, really pretty simple at the end of the day. I have a lot of our brokers, you know, that I manage, and they want the best advice. And how we do it, and how we've been so successful. I'm leaving here after this interview and heading up to a 14,000 acre ranch. And I just,
wow.
You know, I just say, hey, look, guys, it comes down to really easy. You do what you say what you do, and you got to return phone calls. You be prompt. You be honest and transparent. You know, you put your boots on every day and go to work. And if you love what you do, the rest will come naturally. What better thing could someone do? You know, that what's the saying is, if you find something you love, you really never have to work a day in your life. And a lot of our brokers, that's one of the prerequisites for our brokerage, is that they have to have a passion for the outdoors. They have to have some component of their life. They don't necessarily have to be hunters per se, or you know, farmers, you know, or a rancher per se, but some kind of a component of their life that has an outdoor component. And you know, maybe hiking or photography, fly fishing, that is still with them, for those people to be able to work for our company, because really that just makes it the job that much more exciting. When they love it, that really transitions into success. That's the best way I can put it.
Perfectly. Do you just have the one office, or you have multiple offices?
So we're a pretty techie company. We're a cloud-based, non-traditional cloud-based company. We've tried to take full advantage of the industry and the way that the industry is changing, as opposed to having traditional brick-and-mortar offices everywhere. We're very strict on making sure that we adhere to stay in compliance with state standards and real estate agency standards,
right,
as far as brick-and-mortar requirements go. So all of our brokers are one way or the other tied to a brick-and-mortar style office, but we don't necessarily, our complete back-office system is not tied, but we don't have people that just traditionally come into our brick-and-mortars on a daily basis.
How many offices do you have?
I'm sorry?
How many offices do you have?
We have four.
Where are they located?
We have one in Medford, one in Bend, one in Northeast Oregon, one in Vancouver, and one in Pocatello.
So you're actually doing work in Canada?
No, not in Canada. So.
Oh, okay.
That was Idaho, Oregon, and Washington.
Well, I think I failed my geography class. Sorry.
That's all right. And yeah, we don't have an office going in Alaska yet. It fits with our wheelhouse pretty well, with our strategy. But that's a tough market up there. We've had conversations with brokers up there who would love to get into doing what we do. But it's dark half the year, and the other half of the year it's snow. So we've done some cooperative business in there in Alaska and home marketing, but we don't actually have a branch office up there yet.
Who's buying, and what type of real estate and opportunities are there in Alaska, and what are the prices compared to the lower 48?
Fluid diverse in Alaska as I am. The meat of our business is Oregon, Washington and Idaho right now.
Right.
And so I can answer that a lot better. It seems like there's a lot of people in Alaska that are wanting to sell the resorts. There was probably a push in the 80s and 90s for folks to go up there, and I think they've done pretty well in the cold getting to them. So we do have folks that are moving in from Alaska. That's where a lot of our co-marketing stuff comes into play at this time. But Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, it's primarily Oregon and Washington right now, the hemp deal is, the hemp industry is going through the roof. We do a lot of farming. Vineyards and wineries are big in southern Oregon and on the west side of the Cascades, all the way up through Portland. Since Trump signed the farm bill, and there was components of that that have to do with hemp, the non-THC hemp, there's been a big influx here this last year with hemp for this particular area. Is actually known for the CBD oil for the medical use for hemp. And there's some big players coming in. I mean, there's folks that are flying in from Chicago, and there's some very, very intelligent people, very influential people, big companies that are involved with it. Interestingly enough, it also adds a second component to the farming, which I fully anticipate we'll probably go into the Midwest pretty soon. The traditional farmers, as I'm sure everyone knows, it's a full-time job and not a lot of rewards financially. You have to really love what you do. But the traditional farmers who are farming hay are starting to convert over to farming components of hemp that are non-THC hemp for the CBD oil. And the reason they're doing that is because they are, instead of just cutting hay and having all the expense and time into it for a minimum return, they're starting to grow hemp, and then they can sell off the flower portion for the CBD oil and make an alternative income, and then they're able to harvest the rest of the stems and still feed that out to the cattle.
Wow.
So it's kind of a double useful product.
Yep. We just did a show on that a couple weeks ago. This is our guest today is Garrett Zoller. This is Let's Talk Land. Start off.
Okay. The ALC is the accredited land consultants. They're more than land professionals. They're the most accomplished, the most experienced, and the highest performing land experts across the country. Whether they specialize in agricultural lands or timber, ranch, or recreational properties, vacant lands, or development, achieving the ALC designation isn't easy. It requires successful completion of a rigorous education program, and it requires a proven track record of performance and commitment to professionalism. So when a land professionalist becomes an accredited land consultant, the individual joins a select group, select network of professionals who work together to build and share knowledge, develop trust and relationships, and expand business opportunities, trust opportunities across the United States. So they've achieved the highest designation through the Real Estate Land Institute. Wearing the ALC designation or having the ALC designation is definitely a badge, I guess you want to say, of honor or a well-deserved designation, because it allows you to pride yourself, because not only through the education portion of it, but the proven track record. You have to meet minimum requirements, and it's a dandy designation. That
we're very unique, aren't we?
Absolutely. Not to mention just the whole friendship and network of.
Oh, unbelievable!
I mean, that's how I met you. I mean, I see you every single year, and I look forward to it every year.
Yes, sir. Me too. It's like a family reunion, isn't it?
It is, actually. Yeah, absolutely.
We'll be in Cefe in March next year. We just was in Albuquerque in March this year, and next year we'll be in Santa Fe, and hopefully I'll be there, and you too, and our three or four or five hundred other RLI members. Now, I think the last count, I don't have the exact number, but there's about 540 accredited land consultants around the United States. So if you are seriously involved in real estate and the land venues, you definitely want to work with the highest professionals you can. And, of course, we're so tightly networked that when we have a situation and maybe it's unique property, we're going to talk about something. You sold a town, made national news. That's sort of the end of the program. But, you know, when you have an assignment and you don't quite have the experience at it, we just help each other. I've never seen another group of realtors so willing to help and teach and mentor fellow agents like our organization. So I know you're proud to be a member, and I've been a member since 1998, took my first class in 97 subdivision course with Ned Massey. And because of that course, I developed over 60 rural subdivisions, because it gave me the confidence and experience and the resources. When I first started, I leaned on several of my contacts that I'd met through class and other events through RLI, and they helped mentor me and got me started. So it's quite an organization. Again, to our listening audience, our website's www.RLI, which stands for Realtors Land Institute, www.RLILand.com. So make sure you check us out. So just want to talk about the different areas that you're in. Did you have some questions, Teresa, before we went into Oregon?
Thank you for remembering that I am still sitting here.
Were you over
with
there waving at me and, you know, like sitting there with bated breath?
Yeah. I mean, because I wasn't done.
Sorry.
I was just curious. I had a couple of questions. And the first one I want to start where we left off was, are there special needs in your area for the land to grow hemp or vineyards?
There is. You know, it's so in my area in particular, let's just take Oregon, for example, the southwest part of the state, and I know just enough about hemp probably to be dangerous or to make myself.
Need to listen to the Kurt Gobel show I did a couple weeks ago. It was we learned a lot.
I love that guy, yeah. Kurt Rock, man. I took my first class with him like 4 years ago in Arizona, and just completely over my eyes. And then I actually had him come here to Medford. I'm the chapter president for the Northwest chapter of
right.
RLI, and we had our one of our classes. He was my first pick to
absolutely.
Actually come to
I love Kirk to
one of our classes. Yeah, he was a great guy. So to answer your question, I guess to make sure I understand it correctly, there is a unique demand for it. We have a lot of mountainous property. I had mentioned valleys earlier. So in the valleys is where the majority, obviously, where the farming happens. And, you know, there's certain requirements for water, obviously. And in Oregon, it's kind of an awkward water state. The state owns all the water. Basically, it's almost like a thread and a needle on making sure that all the compliance is met. You know, there's the only thing that stays the same, it seems like, in the whole cannabis industry is change. And, you know, it's a hot topic for, you know, some folks are, if there's some folks that have, it's an educational topic, I guess you want to say, because we were one of the states like Colorado and Washington that originally legalized cannabis as a recreational use, you know, the THC, you know, portion of it,
right.
And that rubbed a lot of folks wrong, and just that are, you know, that are, and neither here nor there, it just did, you know, and so now the cannabis wave is coming through, and there's a lot of folks that maybe the other portion rubbed wrong, but I see that the tide turning with people seeing the benefits, so many benefits of the non-THC, the non-psychogenic cannabis plant and the way it's used, and, quite candidly, I also see a lot of very successful, intelligent, professional individuals that are interested in the market return and the processing of it. And so it is increasing our land values quite a bit because they have the money. I guess you want to say crowdfunding would be a key word. I think it was Article 3 of the Jobs Act a few years ago where
right.
People can, you know, put their money together.
Yep.
And so, you know, as an example, I mentioned there was we've had two or three different buyers that they're flying in, and they're not flying in on commercial jets. They're flying in on their own airplanes. And I totally get the fact that everything that glitters does isn't gold, but they're sharp folks, and they're all business, and it's a completely separate venue site selection, I guess you want to say. And
what percentage of your business is, and I'm sure that's increasing right now, of your sales?
You know, I think that it's increasing, and I think that the biggest thing is the dollar value, because a lot of folks that are coming in, I mean, we still do a lot of timber and a lot of wineries and vineyards. The wineries and vineyard portion is kind of a unique, and I'm not sidetracking your answer here. It's always been kind of a lifestyle, you know, but there's not really the folks who would come in, let's say, the last couple of years was a buzzword with the vineyards and the wineries because they wanted that lifestyle, but they didn't anticipate a large return on their investment. And so because since this year, when the Farm Bill was signed, it seems like there was a jump start, and because there's an anticipated return on the investment and a big return opportunity is where there's a lot of interest, and so it kind of breaks down into two categories. Unfortunately, just like the recreational cannabis, when it happened, it seems like as far as the folks that are inquiring, as far as our business goes, and showing people property, it seems like 60-70% of people are inquiring. Unfortunately, the majority of those folks, it seems like there are a lot of them, know somebody who knows somebody who actually has the money.
Right.
You know?
They've done their homework.
A lot of exactly. You know, but the actual closings, you know, I would have to guess that it's probably only about 20%, you know, of our overall business right now. So maybe, you know, I shouldn't say only, that's a pretty good post.
That's significant, sure.
And that happened the first of this year, you know. So the first of the year, I mean, I think we've had it's a difficult industry to navigate, I guess you want to say, because, for instance, we had I think we had two or three different multi-million-dollar parcels in escrow at the first of the year under pivot and the soils, and we go through all the way to the very, you know, to the time to close, and they don't close for one reason or another,
right.
Whether it be funding or their you know, their crowd, you know, if something went wrong, you know, licensing. There's a lot of things that can actually go wrong at the end. So it's kind of a high risk deal.
Yeah,
but
that's okay. It's getting better, and we actually have that. We have the laws here for not for cannabis, but here in North Carolina and Virginia. So we're starting to see more of it, too. You're getting more inquiries, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. It's funny. My brother was in service, and he was stationed. He was in the Marines. He was stationed somewhere towards California. And he told me, he said, it seems like you guys are the trendsetters for the East Coast, because you guys get it first and then we follow suit. But it's took us a little while, but we're getting inquiries on the hemp. That's starting to be something new. And the vineyards, I just sold a vineyard to a guy who, he's French and he's moved here, so North Carolina is becoming vineyard quality land as well.
Yeah, we have over 100 vineyards now.
And most of them around here are boutique vineyards. And I think some of them are larger, but he was starting a boutique vineyard, and he only bought 10 acres, but he's pretty well known. His family had started the vineyards in the Biltmore House and Gardens, so I feel like he's going to be successful.
So when you say boutique vineyards, is that like basically a hobby vineyard?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've got this. The Biltmore was the first large one for many years, and because it's in the mountains of Asheville, the climate killed most of the plants. But they are the largest processor in the state. And then here locally, Surrey Community College, a number of years ago, the Shelton brothers, they started out as tract home builders back in the 50s, 60s. And, you know, a number of years ago, the two brothers sold their business for several $1 billion. And, of course, they were world travelers and were very interested in wine. So they actually sponsored and helped the local college create, I think it's the only school in the world that has the vintner school, the enology school, plus they have their own vineyards and they make their own wine. It's a total package. A number of years ago, a group of Chinese came over and did an accelerated course and took it back because they were interested in it. But because of that, the Chilton Racing got into it, and of course the Sheltons, and then there's probably right now there's over 100 wineries in North Carolina now, so it's huge.
Wow.
And our grapes and our wines are excellent because of our climate and our soils, mostly clay loam. But but let's move on. I want to talk about the different areas you're in and have our audience kind of glean. Oregon, you know, you're known for vineyards and waterfronts, and says, and I'm just kind of reading this. This is off your website, if it's okay. You guys did brilliantly in your communication. It says, we're the land of wildlife and hunting properties. We deal with our region's finest rural farms and ranches. We have our property in Washington, Alaska, Oregon, Idaho, and have a goal to provide the finest living standards of whole America and to spread this around the globe. We're the best in the Northwest Pacific and find Oregon vineyards and waterfront properties for sale in Oregon, moreover, wineries for sale in Oregon. We've got our customers' huge farmlands in Oregon, as well as Oregon is a vineyard country and well-known for its vineyards and wineries and quality crops. Oregon has the highest yield and supply of water. In fact, the waterfront properties are also for sale, which is ideal for vineyards. We also have Oregon vineyards and waterfront properties for sale. Of course, water is an essential component of any farmland. And, of course, out west of the Mississippi, especially the far west, you know, like I said, the state owns all the water. And the laws there are so totally different than they are here. We don't have those requirements. But you have very fertile sun. And, of course, your climate there is just perfect for growing probably just about anything like it is here. But, you know, with your rain and your sunlight and your soils, those are the three ingredients. It sounds like that's just paradise to live in.
Well, I'm confused. How does the state own the water? I mean, did I misunderstand?
No, it's not. That's what they. It's riparian laws here in Oregon, and that's the way they work. Basically, they there's certain basically segments where that are excluded, like a surface spring. If a surface spring doesn't flow into a well-defined creek or canal off property, then the landowner could use that to themselves. But it's a topic in Oregon. Definitely, it's not like Texas and. Or anything else. Now we do have water rights that we can obtain, basically the state of Oregon sees that water is basically their in their ownership and they have control.
And we're talking to Garrett Zoller today, and this is Let's Talk Land. Go for it.
Just talking about our the different services we offer and the uniqueness or the difference between our real estate markets across the United States. So actually, that's one of the things I love about the RLI and talking and having relationships with folks like you is that we can exchange our ideas about different potential sales or different development of land, about the markets and how the markets are changing. You know, you just touched on a price per acre a little bit ago.
Right.
And it sounds like your price per acre isn't too much different than some of our price per acres, depending on what the type of land that we actually have that we have to offer. For instance, some of our high-end farm vineyard type round is 15, you know, can go for $15,000 an acre, $30,000 an acre, depending on where it's at, if it's planted or not, what kind of seedlings are in there, and kind of starters and so forth. But, you know, hay ground, traditionally, I mean, if irrigated good ground, can be $4,000 an acre, and timber ground usually runs pretty steady around $1,000 to $1,100 an acre. Like I say, some of the extra components of, you know, the hemp or the cannabis, makes a difference or an impact on the market and also the availability, you know. But it's interesting talking to you about how your approach to selling like that, the availability or what's harder to sell, the smaller tracts or not.
Right.
If you think the 20 or 30 acre tracts are hard to sell, try 14,000 acres.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Now, who are your buyers for that? They're not local. They're joining property owners or the state buys real estate. They buy through us sometimes.
Yeah, not as much state. Actually, there are a lot of folks that are from out of the area for these types of properties. I'm heading out to show this property tomorrow, and it's from another ranch owner who has another large parcel in that region. I guess you'd want to say.
Right.
That wants to expand his cattle operation, and so it also comes to the 27,000 acre graze permit, and the grazing permit is, you know, allows the cattle to be able to feed on that 27,000 acres.
Are you using helicopters to preview something like that? I mean, I know a lot of our agents do. I know a lot of our agents do, because, I mean, it's not that unusual. A lot of the RLI guys in some of the states, I mean, some of them have 30 and 40 and 50,000 acre properties, and I know they use helicopters and to.
We have had folks that buyers that have limited time and they want to lease a helicopter or charter one, so we've gone that route before. But traditionally, it's just we take a couple days and have side-by-sides and just take our time. We have a cooler full of water and, you know, snacks and preview the property.
What a great day.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about.
We have such a hard life, don't we?
Exactly. So, yeah, I'll expect there to be a bunch of elk. This particular property, it holds a lot of local elk. I'm looking forward to it. It's almost like a break in the office, I'll tell you. So,
four walls of the world, I call it.
Yep. You know, the reality is, though, the bread and butter of our company is really more what you were talking about. We sell everything from a half acre to a half acre that's just rural, maybe on a lakefront property that's
right.
For recreational use. Acres that those are what we sell. Those are the bread and butters to keep the lights on. And I think that it's safe to say that ourselves and a lot of the bigger ranching companies that are, you know, out west are on the map or in the spotlight because of the bigger properties.
Sure.
And because they're real nice. But the reality is there's just a lot of people who can afford those. And so sifting through those people and make sure they're qualified and so forth is it's a long-term game, a long-term hold as a listing. And a lot of strategy involved to be able to prep to sell something like that. And but on the day-to-day stuff, we have a lot of 5 acres.
Who are you using for your financing? We use Farm Credit, which is national. You know, that's the generic name. They seem to have the best program. I've done millions and millions and millions of dollars with them, and extremely satisfied customers.
I would agree with that. I've used Farm Credit myself personally for a couple different properties. I have my family and I have some holdings outside of the of the valley here. It's our little getaway. And then there's another company, and I'm going to lose it here. It's like it's off the top of my head. It's a local company. It's the Northwest that we're starting to use a little bit. But,
right.
The Northwest, the Farm Credit is, it's called Northwest Farm Credit here. As far as
hard to be.
Farm Credit company goes. Yeah, they are. They programs there. The last property I bought was a timber piece, and I logged it personally. And to navigate through that is extremely helpful.
What type of timber do you have out that way? Mostly pine, right?
Nope. Mostly is fir.
Fir.
Fir. Yep, Doug fir. And then we do have pine, and there are some white fir that's not as desirable as cedar. And in fact, I'm looking forward to Mark Skillman, who's another RLI, or another ALC, actually, in this area.
Right.
I believe we just went through. He just has, another timber class for RLI. And Tom Damon, I'm not sure if you remember Tom or not. But
I know Tom.
Comes to the National. Yep, good guy. He works for our company now. And
good for you.
And,
Tom's a great agent.
Great guy, yeah. He's fantastic.
A lot of experience.
And, so the new timber class is my understanding. Mark has it on thumb drive, and I'm looking forward to going through that because I think it's going to be a little more acclimated to our climate, and our terrain.
Be.
I guess you want to stay here.
Yeah.
It is tough. I mean, it's the mountain country realm we're at is you may have to helicopter log, or you may have to use a yarder. Some of the cat logging. I know you guys have some mountain ranges there
we
as
do.
Well. It's just that access and reciprocal easements or that type of stuff is all where a broker really has the availability to shine. And so when I say we have to have the passion of what we do, as an example, Tom Damon has been a faller. He's skidded logs. He ropes. Team roper, because he's hands-on, type real estate broker. Robert Freeman's one of our brokers. He's been a timber faller for 25 years. So all of our brokers have these
types of backgrounds, yeah.
Yeah, that are hands-on experience, and it's that's invaluable to our clients when they're coming to to buy property or if they're going to sell property, because we understand everything from let's say well water or carrying rights to easements and access and the tax laws.
Right.
So the land development ordinances are huge. We touched on that when we were on break a little bit. You said they had a 10-acre rule back where you're from.
Right.
The land development ordinances in Oregon and in Washington and Idaho is actually pretty lax, but Oregon and California, Oregon and Washington are a little bit like California. They're pretty tough. We
sure.
have to. We have a sensitive habitat overlay for recreational, species. For wintering deer and elk range. There's template tests. The forest fires have been a hugely hot topic over the last couple of years.
Sure.
We've had some serious issues with forest fires this last two summers. In fact, our showings were down about 60% this last summer.
Really?
Because we had such bad smoke in this area from the forest fires. So, those all those factors, can affect the market. And so I had a broker tell me one time when the sales change, you got to change your sales.
That's
and,
right. Yeah.
And you got to adapt. And that's the best, I guess, the analogy that you can really look at. So
what's the difference in, I know you're dealing in three states, of course, you're looking in Alaska. I mean, what's the range of difference between, say, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, other than the laws?
You mean as far as pricing goes or as far as
pricing and also just it's different topography, right, or different climates?
Yep.
Population base. Idaho's not heavily populated.
You'd be surprised. Idaho is getting to be much more populated as things go on. Idaho is kind of in my humble opinion, a little sister to or a little brother to Texas. I mean, they're a pretty a conservative state. There's a lot of remote people out there that are just good grassroots folks, and their land development ordinances are pretty simple. I haven't actually gone through the building process there. I'm a principal broker there. I have a couple brokers in Idaho, but to build a structure, they're pretty lax as opposed to, let's say, in Oregon, where we have to. It's almost like, they want to know the name of your first child before they'll let you build anything.
Sure.
And, they're also able to break up land into smaller parcels in Idaho a lot easier. The land development ordinances are much, much easier. I can even say from a real estate standpoint, I like their licensing process. It was pretty straightforward and common sense.
Right.
So, it is somewhat not as populated. I mean, it's not a huge state. Boise is a really fast growing area. And as you get up into the panhandle, which would be, let's say, and north, equivalent to Washington, the higher up you get, the more wet, I guess, it gets,
right.
The more rugged it gets, just like kind of Montana, that Montana, Idaho, Washington corridor there.
But, gotcha.
You get pretty cold. There's a lot of publicity regarding, everyone talks about living in Montana or, the panhandle of Idaho. It can get pretty rough. I mean, when I say pretty rough, the extreme climate. And we've had some folks that have moved there and then decided, holy cow, all of a sudden it's going into June, you're actually looking at 2 or 3 foot of snow.
Yeah.
Overnight.
Shovel it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be pretty rugged, but beautiful. So, I mean, the recreational portion and component of it is huge in the Pacific Northwest. And we've got, we do a lot of recreational grounds, and hunting in Idaho is highly sought after, as well as working in Washington.
Where are they hunting there?
The species?
Right.
Is that correct? So in the Pacific Northwest is a matrix of a lot of stuff. Oregon is primarily blacktail deer on the west side of the Cascades, deer on the east side of the Cascades, and then black bear is prominent throughout. You got Rocky Mountain elk and Roosevelt elk. Mountain lions are prominent in the whole Pacific Northwest. Elk and deer in Idaho, upland bird throughout the entire Pacific Northwest. Black bear and elk and deer, obviously, in Washington as well. I personally think that probably one of the next world records for elk is going to come out of Washington. They've got some
Right. Handy
areas up there. They've just got some monster elk.
And then you have outstanding fishing there, too, right?
Great fishing. I mean, yeah, Pacific Northwest is really known for the recreational values there. Moose up in the panhandle area of Idaho. Wolves are starting to be a lot more prominent in this area, which could be a controversial subject. Predators have been pretty tough. I mean, that's kind of my specialty, I guess you want to say, is wildlife management. That's what I like to focus on. I've done a lot of recreational properties or properties for investment from a timber component value and be able to hold on for long-term and recreational value. There's there's obviously a huge value for someone to be able to put up their feet and relax on their own piece of ground, be able to hunt and be able to manage that. So predators in my opinion, need to be managed a lot better throughout the Pacific Northwest. I mean, that's from a personal view.
Sure,
of owning 560 acres, and I've got I don't even want to tell you how much money I have in trail cameras up on my property, and I don't golf, and I don't have a Harley Davidson. That's just what I do, and that's what my family does, and we enjoy going out in the outdoors. I've got like nine lions on my camera last year on that 500 acres, and a lot of black bear and so forth. So, it's always changing,
Yeah, no matter exactly.
What. So,
but see, one of the things that's important for people to understand, again, us land professionals, Realtor State Land Institute, ALCs especially, we're trained. That's what our organization does. It trains us, and then with the relationships with our fellow members and their experience, the average realtor, when you go, I know here in North Carolina, it's 180 hours, right, to Teresa, you went through it.
Yeah, 180 hours of
to get your license, and that's provisional, and then you have to take after that 3 30-hour classes. And the syllabus just doesn't allow time to talk about land brokerage or commercial management or brokerage or property management, the specialties we call them. And I know I've been working with our commission, and one of the 30-hour classes, they throw a slide up. It says land is the most complicated of all real estate transactions. And then you ask the instructor, well, nobody teaches the instructor, so they don't even know how to answer the question. So I'm working on a course right now for the instructors to teach that portion of our syllabus to give them some ammunition to at least respond. And actually, I have the only we have to have 8 hours of CE in North Carolina. 4 hours is required. And then we have over 300 titles that are houses for our classes. I created a four-hour class introduction to land brokerage, and believe it or not, I'm the only land instructor with the only land class, CE class, in the state of North Carolina. It's it, me. And I'm finding out, as I talk to fellow agents like yourself, do you guys have any CE classes other than RLI now? When we do RLI classes, we try to get them certified in the states we teach for CE credit. But other than the RLI classes, do you guys have any class in any of the states? If you called up your real estate commission and said, I want to take a CE class on the subject of land, what would their answer be?
Their answer would be go to our website and find for yourself, I believe.
There isn't any.
See for yourself. Yeah, I'm not aware of any.
No, there aren't.
For me personally, that's all I focus on. That's all we focus on in RLI classes because they add such value and provide such value to our brokers. So, in fact, our standard operating procedure manual in our independent contractor agreement, we strongly recommend the participation in RLI because of the value that RLI has to offer. So.
Yep. We're requiring all of our agents to join at the appropriate time because it's expensive. And the classes are expensive, and, of course, maintaining the designation. But my point to the public out there, again, is this is a national show, is that if you are wanting to deal in land, whether you're buying or selling or managing, you know, go to RLI, WWRLI Land, and you'll find at least a member that's had some land education and hopefully ALCs in your area that can help you professionally. And I'm not trying to pull back on our industry, but we just don't provide that type of education. And land is the most complicated of all. I mean, just to some of the subjects we touched on today, the average real estate agent would have no idea about a lot of the stuff we talk about. And that's the purpose of this show, too, is free land education to help not only the public out there, but to help agents at least have another source where if they want to learn about surveying or soils or hemp or, you know, the websites, map rights, the service agency, crowdfunding, artificial intelligence. We're trying to touch a little bit of everything in this show to help people and to promote companies like yourself, Garrett. And
I couldn't agree more, actually, with what you say. I empathize with the public the same. It's when we were just touching on, as far as education and besides the outside of the general getting and licensing of real estate, you know, we were touching on the recreational portion of it. Our brokers, when you're dealing with a buyer from another area and they want to know about hunting or fishing or, you know, something, the brokers who specialize in let's say Real Estate Land Institute, or firms like ours or yours, they know the different synopsis, they know the seasons, they know the species. Are you a bow hunter or are you a rifle hunter? How's your health? Because that's gonna play a big impact of what kind of terrain, you know, an area we're gonna put you in or be able to look at, you know, make sure it's not deeper in a cow's face, you know, and make sure the land is conducive to be able to for what you're looking for.
Sure.
You know, and there's so many avenues that's where really, once again, I think that their broker who specializes in land really has the opportunity to shine. And I can't say how many times clients who have said, man, you know, there is really a huge difference because you guys know what you're talking about.
We hear it all the time. I want to switch subjects because this is one of the reasons why you're successful. And this is an example of someone taking a unique project, okay, with a lot of pieces, and putting it together. there was a town, little town, called Tiller. Is it with Tiller or Tyler?
Yeah, sure. Tiller. Yep,
Tiller.
Tiller, yep.
Oregon, right? And your firm, actually got the assignment to sell a town. It made national news. I watched it. I didn't know it was you at the time, but this was 257. This was an incorporated town. I forgot when it was incorporated. Back in the 1800s or something.
It's an unincorporated town, but that was part of it. That was part of the interest in it was to be able to incorporate that. And once the town is incorporated into a city, then obviously the city can supersede some of those land development ordinances we spoke about earlier. So it just provided a huge opportunity, not to mention just the town itself.
Sure. You know,
obviously,
how did you get this assignment?
Well, ironically enough, we were just talking about brokers, and I was recommended to the sellers, to the owner of this this town, by two different brokers, as being evidently the guy who would be could strategically put the plan together and have enough motivation and intellect to make it happen and sell it. So the owner of the town, which was basically an estate, his parents had passed away, and the father retired there in this town. And as the logging industry went away, he kind of started buying up these small parcels until eventually he owned the majority of the town, with the exception of the general store and another little house and
the school, right?
Yep, and the school. The school was a public entity, and that was my first. I guess you want to say full experience on dealing with a public entity and selling a public entity and going to the in front of the board of directors and public hearings and all that kind of stuff. Just selling public property is a big deal. To answer your question is that I was recommended or referred by a couple different brokers as being the person to come and interview. And I thought it was a unique project and didn't realize how many moving parts it really had, going into it at all. Because there's easements and access and riverfront property, about a mile of both sides of the river, and access issues to get to the timber on the other side of the river, and, you know, public, there's commercial properties. There's a variance of different types of zonings. The social factor was something that I didn't anticipate. You have a lot of folks who lived around the town. There's a post office included in this. Obviously, the post office business itself was not.
That was a ground lease, yeah.
Yeah, the ground lease was, and the structure of it. And so essentially, the whole town was 256 acres. And then there was about 600 people who lived around the outskirts outside of town. And they would come into town every day to the post office. And before the school closed down, their kids would go to that school, they'd go to the general store, and it was a regular little town, and it was all privately owned. It just happened to be privately owned by one primary person for the most part. And so the social factor of reactions from folks wanting to know, what was going to happen to their town, and that's their home, and it was justifiable, obviously, because, there's a lot of uncertainty.
Sure, of course. Who's going to buy it and what they're going to do with it?
Absolutely.
Just a couple of things I pulled out. There was a full mile of the south, Yupakwa? Is that how you pronounce that?
Umpqua River.
Great old Indian name. And the Elk Creek frontage. There was over 200 million board feet of mercantile timber. That's quite a bit of timber, 2 million. Yep. There was multiple buildings, multiple houses. There was over 13-acre pre-platted subdivision. There were 13 commercial zone affiliated tax lots. There were 4 industrial affiliated tax lots. Where she had the Tiller store, equipment, real property, additional living quarters, and I think the store was separate and the thing. But with not a whole lot of time left, how did you go about marketing this? I know it eventually got on TV. It was national news. Douglas County in Oregon.
It is. I still haven't put my finger on exactly how. And actually, it wasn't just national news. It was international news. That's okay. Interviewed on the BBC twice over in
really?
Europe. I was Skype interviewed.
That's
it was
cool.
pretty crazy when it went viral. you know, so I, we had a lot of different strategies and trying to figure out who our buyers may be for that. And I hired a an SEO specialist for doing some acronyms to try to, you know, get keyword searches. I had mentioned earlier in the show that cannabis was Oregon was one of the third state, I think, to legalize cannabis in Colorado and Washington and Oregon. You know, so we just started putting all these keyword searches out there and writing blogs to try to get picked up. And it was first picked up out of this little paper out of Eugene, Oregon, and then went to another news station. Pretty soon the local news started contacting me. So I guess it's so the strategy involved traditional real estate methods regarding MLSs and our syndications that we traditionally market to. But I'm pretty confident that it came back because we had a huge influx of folks, but it came back something related to cannabis. I know that my SEO guy was thinking I was crazy when I said, hey, make sure cannabis and marijuana are part of the keyword searches that were out there casting the net for because it's Oregon and that's going to be part of Oregon. And then, you know, obviously, you know how rankings work. The more times things are picked up on, the higher ranking you get. And pretty soon it was picked up on by the Associated Press. It went viral. Next thing I knew, Shepard Smith on Fox News was talking about it. It was on the front page of Yahoo website, MSN.
Crazy.
Pretty crazy. Yeah. So,
all right, we're going to wrap it up here. How about giving us a commercial for how we get in touch with you, your company, your address, your phone number, your website, any way someone could reach you guys?
Absolutely. I appreciate that, Lou.
My pleasure.
The easiest and best way is to look us up at our website. It's extremely easy to remember. It's just www.landandwildlife.com, and it's all one word, L-A-N-D-A-N-D, wildlife.com, where you'll see our website. You can learn about our team, and we're located throughout the Oregon, Washington, Idaho, diverse, qualified in farm, ranch, and recreational type properties. If you have any interest in anything rural, we'd love to hear from you. Timber farming, cattle, with the Wild West out here in some areas, and it's really hard to beat. Our phone number is 866-559-3478.
Repeat that for me.
866-559-3478. 3478.
Okay.
It actually spells dirt.
Dirt. The very okay. Last I love word. It.
Yep. Yep. 559 dirt. And you're always available to email us. General inquiries for email is clientservices@landandwildlife.com. So.
Wow. If you're looking for the best firm to work with in the Northwest, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and future Alaska, we've got a good contact here. I'll put your email address on our show. So people contact you, and I'm sure you'll respond to them. But anyway, thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any guests or topics that you'd like to suggest, we'd appreciate them. All questions are welcome, and all of our guests are emailed, and your questions or concerns as well. This show is for the public and, most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source for land education. All shows after broadcast are downloaded on my website, which is www.letstalkland.net, L-E-T-S. talkland.net. We're also on Podbeam, Spotify, Facebook, and others. My email is lou@mylandpro.com. My cell number is 336-669-1405. Rodney, how do they get in touch with us here?
Well, they can email us at wkt1090.com, and also they can join your show every Saturday morning from 9 to 10, and also they can download the Simple Radio app and pick us up throughout the entire world.
And WKTE is the oldest station in the Triad.
That's right, and been nominated 5 years in a row as being the top beach and oldies radio station.
Beach and oldies, I love it.
That's right.
My favorite station.
Everybody, it's the feel-good music.
It absolutely is. And by the way, don't forget to stay on the station here because Dr. Barbie will be coming up next. Ask the doctor, and you'll enjoy Dr. Barbie and what he has to give you. Thanks again for joining us today. We'll see you next week.